Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello again and welcome back. I'm Jim Tedder in Washington with the program that helps you learn and improve your American English skills. We bring you important and interesting stories every day, and we do it in a way that makes it easy for you if English is not your first language. You will notice that we speak a little slower than normal, and we use fewer words that are easier to understand. Today, we have a special program for you. It is about journalism in the United States and a famous publication that recently made a big mistake. When future reporters are studying in journalism schools, they are often told by their teachers to make sure that they do not become part of the story. In other words, make sure that you just report what happened, but do not become involved with the people in the story. But in this case, what the reporter wrote and later found out that she was wrong became a major news story in itself. In December of last year, a well-known American magazine retracted a major story. The story reported on a sexual attack at the University of Virginia. A student, identified as Jackie, told the reporter a group of students raped her at a fraternity party in 2012. But the magazine later said the story was not true. Katie Weaver joins me to help explain what happened.
The story was called A Rape on Campus, A Brutal Assault and Struggle for Justice at UVA. Rolling Stone magazine published it in November 2015. Reporter Sabrina Rubin Erdley wrote the report. It received a lot of interest. Other magazines, newspapers, and blogs followed with more stories about sexual attacks. The media also discussed other issues related to the report, such as alcohol abuse at colleges and social pressure from student groups. Women's groups and others protested against the actions the report described. Following the Rolling Stone report, Teresa Sullivan, the president of University of Virginia, suspended all activities on campus related to fraternities and sororities, and she asked the police department to investigate the rape incident. But within a week of the report's publication, Richard Bradley, an author and an editor, raised a question. Is the Rolling Stone story true? He asked why the reporter did not interview the victim's friends or the accused rapists. On December 5th, the Washington Post raised more questions about the story. The Post said there was no party on the day of the reported sexual attack, and even Jackie's friends questioned her story.
Publications rarely retract a story. Admitting a story is false can seriously damage a publication's reputation. Rolling Stone owner Jan Winner wanted to learn what mistakes were made in reporting and publishing the story and how to avoid them in the future. So he asked experts at the Columbia Journalism Review, or CJR, to investigate. Rolling Stone's investigation, a failure that was avoidable, was released April 5th. Columbia journalism professor Sheila Coronel wrote the piece along with Steve Cole, the dean of the school's journalism department, and Derek Kravitz, a researcher at Columbia Journalism School.
The investigators' findings were simple. They wrote that the reporter, Sabrina Rubin Eardley, made one major mistake. She based her whole story on information from a single person, the woman who said she was raped. The CJR report noted that Ms. Eardley wrote about three friends of Jackie. She described the conversation the four shared on the night of the reported attack. Ms. Eardley used false names for the friends, but did not identify them as false. Ms. Eardley also failed to explain that the description of the conversation came from Jackie only. Ms. Eardley did not contact the friends to confirm the conversation or learn anything else they might offer. Ms. Eardley also never learned the identity of a single suspected attacker. However, she did partly identify the reported attackers as members of the Phi Kappa Psi fraternity. Ms. Eardley wrote that the attack took place during a party at the fraternity's house on campus. And Ms. Eardley did seek a comment from the fraternity. But the CJR report says the reporter provided the fraternity very little information about Jackie's claims or any details of the story. As a result, the fraternity was not able to provide very helpful information. The Columbia Journalism Review investigation did not blame just Sabrina Rubin Eardley for the story. It also said the editors involved in a rape on campus failed. It said the editors did not urge Ms. Eardley to seek confirmation of Jackie's story. It said they should have demanded that she get more sources. And finally, the investigators wrote that the editors should have blocked publication of the story.
Why did a good reporter make such basic mistakes? Ms. Eardley told the CJR team that she became too sensitive or sympathetic to the subject of her story. She said she believed Jackie's story. She said Jackie was unwilling to provide names and claimed to be frightened for her life. But Ms. Eardley also said she was worried Jackie would withdraw from the story if Ms. Eardley asked too much for additional information. CJR's Sheila Coronel said that concern was a major failing on Sabrina Rubin Erdely's part. Journalists have to be able to break with a subject if they cannot responsibly report on it.
Last month, police ended their investigation of the reported rape. They said they did not find any evidence of an attack at the fraternity house, nor of a party on the day claimed in the report, nor of a member described as the leader of the attack. Phi Kappa Psi fraternity says it will take legal action against Rolling Stone for what it calls reckless or irresponsible reporting. A fraternity statement also says the group worries that the whole incident might lead some rape victims to fear reporting real attacks. Like the original piece, A Rape on Campus, A Brutal Assault and Struggle for Justice at UVA, the CJR investigation has led to much public discussion. This time, the subject is journalism and the responsibility it carries. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Jim Tedder in Washington. You are listening to VOA, the Voice of America.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Environment and Science Report. Bees play an important part in the growth of crops. About 4,000 wild bee species are native to North America. Other bee species on the continent were imported from Europe to produce honey. Bees also serve as crop pollinators. These pollinators carry material from one plant to another. This helps the plants produce seeds. Farmers became dependent on this bee activity. But for the past 40 years, the native bee population has been decreasing. Since the winter of 2006, many honeybees have disappeared. Scientists call this colony collapse disorder. VOA recently went to the town of Lockford in the Central Valley of California. Researchers there are mixing plants to try to bring back the bees. Margaret Smither Caporal is a botanist, a scientist who studies plants. She leads the Lockford Plant Materials Center. It is one of more than 24 centers around the country operated by the United States Department of Agriculture. The centers are working to rebuild and support healthy ecosystems. For the past several years, Ms. Smither Caporal has planted different kinds of flowers, grasses, and other plants. She is trying to create a combination of plants that bees will like.
On the right, I have a planting of native grasses. And then in the other field, where you can see it's green, we've planted 8 different commercial pollinator mixes.
Life is not easy for bees. They must deal with pesticides and smaller animals that live on or in them, such as bee mites. But the biggest difficulty is the destruction of areas where they live and eat. Jessica K. Crew works at the Xerces Society, a conservation group. She says growth in agriculture industries and the growth of cities have left bees too few natural areas where they seek their food, pollen, and nectar. These two plant substances make up 100% of a bee's food. So Ms. Crew says bees are totally dependent on some kinds of flowers for their survival. Ms. Crew also says humans need bees to help crops grow.
About 85% of the world's flowering plants require a pollinator, basically, in order to reproduce. In our agricultural ecosystems, about 1 in every 3 bites of food or drink that we consume requires a pollinator.
She says honeybees raised by farmers also face problems. She says farmers provide the bees with food that does not give them what they need when crops are not available. She says that damages the health of the bees. But Ms. Crew says a more serious threat to honeybees